You're listening to TCRG to CEO Radio with your host, Courtney J., TCRG.
Hello and welcome back. This is episode number 18 of TCRG to CEO Radio. I'm your host, Courtney J., TCRG, and I can't wait to talk about today's topic. This has been highly requested and will be part of a series on the TCRG exam. Today I'll be talking about what my experience was with questions submitted by you guys that I will share my experience. So before we get into today's episode, I wanted to make sure everyone knows that you can find me on Instagram at CourtneyJ_TCRG. My last name is spelled out J-A-Y. Or you can join our Facebook group for listeners. It's a private group, so you'll need to answer the questions upon requesting to join the group. And I will make sure that your feedback is included for future episodes. You can find that group at facebook.com/groups/TCRG2CEO. Both Facebook and Instagram, I regularly ask for feedback about the show and how I can include topics about things that you guys want to hear about and will help you. So if you are on either one of those platforms, you can go ahead and follow me over there. And if you are not a social media person and you prefer to stay off, you can get in touch with me through my website. It's www.CourtneyJTCRG.com. And there's a podcast link. You can subscribe to the show and get email updates if social media isn't your thing. So I think today's topic is highly requested only because while there's a syllabus provided for the exam and there's lots of documentation that candidates can look at, until you've really done it, a lot of the exam feels like a big unknown. And not everyone knows someone who's already gone through the process personally. So even if you have, I feel like it's good to get as many people's experiences as we possibly can, just to know what to expect, because of course we're always afraid of the unknown. So all of the things I'm talking about today are my personal experience with the exam. I only took it once, and obviously that means I only met one set of examiners. I was in one particular location, and I know exams can vary quite a bit in terms of the panels and just the way things are set up from location to location. So take that with a grain of salt as you listen, because this is all anecdotal evidence and just my own experience, which is all I can really draw from. So I am fortunate that I have my Tumblr account to look back on. If you know, you know, I was on Tumblr back in its heyday when the Irish dance community was hanging out over there. And I documented my whole lead up to the exam, as well as my exam experience. And at the time, I was just kind of sharing with the people that were there, similar to what I do on my Instagram now. But now I'm so, so glad that I documented it there, because there are things that I documented that I did not remember until I went back to find it and read it and put things together for today's episode. So the more we share, the more we document, the more we record, which is, I think, what I'm going to end up feeling about this podcast later in life, as I'm documenting kind of life as a entrepreneur, as a studio owner, as a young business owner, whatever you want to say. I'm going to be really happy that I have this to look back on for the memories. And so I hope this is very helpful for you. I'm going to jump into my first entry that I made on the first day of the exam. I took my exam in Limerick in June of 2014. So in case you were at that exam or you need some context for where this is coming from, that is my exam location and time. So it was held at the South Court Hotel in Limerick. And as you may know, I lived in Limerick for 4 years as I went to university. So I picked that location only because I was very familiar with the dancing scene there, and it was one less unknown going into it. Just I felt like I had a little bit more of a sense of how it would go. So on the first day of the exam, I started in the afternoon with the written Kaylee paper, and from my entry, I thought it was pretty straightforward, and there was only one 5-point question that gave me grief. And not because I didn't know the answer, but because I couldn't figure out an efficient way of communicating the answer. And I don't have the question documented. So I don't know what the question was that I was so hung up on. But I know that in the sample papers that I would do on a weekly basis as I was studying, the thing that I always struggled with was when you had to follow one person around a chain. So for example, there might be a question that says, in the 16-hand reel, and you are the opposite gent, name all of the people that you will meet on the full chain. I don't know why, but I just can't wrap my brain around that question. I can do it, and I would be able to explain it, but I can't name the people. I don't know. It's so strange. Hopefully, I'm not the only one. So back to my entry. It says, I could be even overthinking it and could get full credit for it. Who knows? Everything else was fine, and I was very happy with how it went. I finished early, on par with my usual time of completion for all the other practice exams that I took. So for context, every Friday as I was studying and as I got closer to the test-taking time, I would sit down with one of the past papers that were available on the CLRG website, and I would set my timer for 2 hours, and I would go through the paper and see, number one, how long it took me, two, the type of questions that I was struggling on, and three, just to practice doing all the writing and making sure that I was answering as if it was the real thing. And I found that I always finished early. Not majorly early, but I always finished early, and I liked knowing going into the paper about how long that it should take me. Of course, every paper is different and it's written by different people and there's different question styles that will come up depending on who wrote the paper. But again, it helped me feel like I was in control of the unknown. And then in my entry, it says, I had what ended up being an hour or so break before we all went back in for the music exam. I only had one tune I debated about, so if I got that wrong, I should have a 95%, and if I got it right, then 100%. 5 traditional sets came up, so that was a bit of a gimme. And this is the part where I felt like other candidates were showing their unpreparedness. I don't know whether all exams are set up this way, but the way that our tables and chairs were set up in rows, I did not have to struggle to see the person in front of me's paper. And not well enough to read their answers, but I could see well enough to know that the person in front of me had left pretty much the entire music exam blank. No answers written down. And especially, as I said, 5 traditional sets came up. That one is a little bit of a throwaway since you have to prepare your traditional sets for the dancing section anyway. So that's my experience with both of those written papers. I dressed, I guess, business casual, and that was a good call because at least all the other candidates in my exam were dressed, they were dressed up, and I'm a pretty casual, laid-back person in general, so to me, they were dressed up. But business casual is great. I guess it is sort of like the equivalent of an interview for a job, taking the exam, so it sounds like, or it seems like all of the candidates kind of took it that way, like dressed like as if it was a job interview. So that's one thing to keep in mind if you are someone who's worried about kind of what outfit to pick or what to wear for your exam. It's silly, the things that we worry about, but, you know, if that can come off your mind, I will include that in my notes for that. So in the entry, it says, the examiners were all really nice. Dan Armstrong, John Morgan, and Mara someone, I didn't catch her last name, were proctoring for the day, and overall it was pretty laid back. I can totally see John Morgan being the bad cop tomorrow, though, and by that I guess I meant in the practical teaching and dancing sections. He reminded me of Snape, as in Harry Potter Snape, by his tone and seriousness. So again, these are memories that I don't have in my brain. This is just what's written down. But I did find that the examiners were very supportive of the candidates. They really did wish us well. They did not give off the vibe that they were out to fail anyone on purpose. And it was purely just on what you showed and what you wrote down and how you scored. And we know that they are not judging based on your competition results. They are not judging based on popularity. It's purely what you show and if you show that you're ready to get your certification. And then in my entry, it says, after the music, we had a briefing about CLRG history and rules and regulations. So attention, future exam takers. There's a new section coming on the CLRG Code of Conduct, Ethics, and Child Protection. I don't know, though, now back to current day, that this ever happened. If it did, I never heard about it. So it's interesting that this was kind of told to us as candidates, because I don't think that this is in effect. And this is, what, 5 years later almost? It sounds like CLRG are trying to clean up their image, as we were also encouraged to report any and all incidents of political corruption and mistreatment of kids by teachers in classes or at competitions. So looking at now in the future, it seems a shame that this wasn't put through. I'm not sure if something happened back in 2014 that kind of spurred this on, but of course we as teachers have the duty to protect children and make sure that we are reporting things that we need to. At least in the States, it's called being a mandated reporter. So if you suspect that a child is being abused or mistreated, not even just by someone at dancing, obviously someone outside of your dance class, you have a duty to report to the proper authorities. And it sounds like this was a fleeting moment in CLRG, but hopefully we will see it back one day. Back to my entry, it says, on the whole, there were many seriously underprepared people there. One girl had a list of set dances she was reviewing just before the music exam, and four or five of them she had written down as having a 7-bar step when none of them do. Read the documents, listen, count, or it even tells you on the CD. That was my advice to future test takers, I guess. As I expected for the written components, if you are prepared well by studying hard and taking frequent practice exams, you would be fine. And a side note, I did a similar practice exam with myself for the music. I used the CLRG CD that they give, and yes, they do play the exact same one. You can put it on an iPod playlist, have a friend hit shuffle, make sure they write down what tunes come up in order. You go ahead and listen, do it, write down your answers, and then just check your own work. And that's an easy way to prepare yourself for the music exam. As a reminder, they play the set dances twice. So we went twice on those, and then the last few where they play the solo dances, they play them once. Final part of my entry for day one, it says, tomorrow is dancing and teaching, and the teaching is much more unpredictable, so we'll see how that goes. Hopefully I won't eat my words about how nice the examiners were. So as you can see, I documented pretty much everything that I could about the written sections, and I feel like those are the easiest to prepare for, only because it's scored completely objectively. There's no subjectivity to a written exam. And I think that's what makes the teaching and dancing sections a little bit more daunting. And of course, you can prepare and study, but there's a lot more moving parts to those. So stay tuned for day two. All right, so we're back with day two's entry. And it starts with, I had my dancing section at 9 a.m. My group had 5 people, including me, so we had plenty of time to breathe between dances. They chose reel for our light step, and then we did jig and hornpipe, and then we were each told our first champ set. As a reminder, they have you go step down the line for your solo dances. They chose my Vanishing Lake, which was my world set, so I was very happy about that. When I finished that, they told me my next set, which was my easy hornpipe set, Blue Eyed Rascal. So you have the time that other candidates dance their sets to prepare, breathe, have a drink, you know, review, whatever you want to do. So we had 5 in the group, which meant if I was dancing my set, the 4 other people were out of the room at that point and they could prepare however they needed to. During the step down the line sections, everybody's in the room together. So in case you have a little bit of stage fright, or in case you're nervous about other people watching you, just know that there will be your other candidates in the room. However, I wouldn't worry about it. It's definitely not scarier than a competition or even in class. I mean, everyone's used to having their classmates watch them, and think of it as no different. Everybody there is your peer and everyone else has the same nerves. Back to my entry, it said, after everyone in my group finished their second set, we all went back in together and were told our trad sets. I had 3C captains and Blackbird. I made a small error in my 3Cs, but I was dancing a different version to everyone else, which I think minimized the damage. I wish I had my results somewhere handy. I'm always impressed when people can recall each of their scores because I can't. But I can tell you that despite that mistake, I still scored at least a 95 in my dancing, and I remember that better than all my other numbers. So it just goes to show that one little mistake is not the end of the world on the dancing section. I think as long as you recover quickly and you are able to show your dancing capability across all the different tasks, then you'll be okay. So continuing on with my entry, it says, I had several hours to regroup before my teaching sections at 6:30 p.m. So I did have quite a while between the dancing section in the morning and then teaching section at night. You, of course, do not have any control over your schedule. You are just assigned whatever slot they give you. And it's important to be flexible and be prepared for anything. But for me personally, I liked having it in two very different settings. So that way I could really focus on each section. We were told to come in wearing our heavy shoes to teach the heavy shoe first. So important to note, if you are getting ready to take your exam, you are expected to teach in proper shoes. I know sometimes as teachers, we are much more comfortable teaching in sneakers, or it's more practical when you have classes back to back, but be prepared to wear your actual shoes. For the heavy shoe, the panel chose two dancers, one that I knew, to teach a heavy jig to. So the panel was selecting the dancers for me. I did not get to choose who I was teaching out of the group in the room. They told me that they were Tús or Mon Grad, which in Ireland is about novice prize winner level. And the boy that I knew, I already knew that he was a world recaller. So I did think this was a little bit strange. For context, he was the youngest age at Worlds, so he must have been under 11 at the time and had gone to his first Worlds and recalled. But a world recaller, even at under 11, is a huge difference from Tús Grad or a novice prize winner. So I taught a step that I knew that they were both able for. So how I made that split second decision is I took kind of my prize winner level treble jig step and kind of was pandering to the lowest common denominator, I guess. The girl was not as advanced when I checked out their steps, and it did go well. They both got through it just fine. I made the modifications for the boy versus the girl because I know that was one of the questions that someone had asked me when I was preparing for this episode. Someone asked, did I have to teach a boy at my exam? And yes, I did. So I wouldn't make too big of a deal out of it. You certainly don't even have to have steps that have to be modified. If you have something that doesn't have toes in it or has pretty standard, basic, you know, non-gender conforming movements in it, then you don't even really have to worry about it. And then the second teaching task was soft shoe, and I was able to select myself the two dancers that I was going to teach for the light dance. And again, being from the Limerick area for the previous 4 years, I did know a lot of the people that were being the dancing crash test dummies for this section. So I selected two dancers that I knew what their capabilities were. One of them actually was a world champion, and I taught them a real step. Now, don't get caught in this trap only because I knew them, I nearly forgot to ask them to show me a step. So make sure that if you're using my strategy, that you really try your hardest to pretend that you don't know them and that you need to see the step from them. Immediately after I had my Kaylee teaching, where my first dance was the body of the eight-hand jig. The younger kids had a bit of a hard time grasping the swing into line, but once I danced it with them from each of their places, they got it. We got up to the set all around, but I didn't get to teach it because the panel was satisfied. So when you're teaching Kaylee, this is off my notes, just personal experience here, you can take your time and don't feel the need to rush through it. If you're doing a good job teaching the dancers, even if it takes you nearly all of the 10 minutes to get through one difficult movement, that's okay. If the panel wants to see something else, they will tell you to either, you know, say, hey, explain the next movement. Or, okay, if one dancer is struggling, how would you have this person do it? They can recognize what is a failure in teaching versus one or two kids not being able to pick it up. So take your time. Don't feel like you need to rush. And they will prompt you to move on if they want you to move on faster. For example, when I got up to the set all around, they just asked me, hey, what would come up next? How would you teach it? Blah, blah, blah. I just kind of went through it verbally. And then my next dance was the harvest time jig, which the kids just flew through. And I was very happy to have gotten this dance because I taught this to one of my classes earlier in the year. So it was one that I was very, very comfortable teaching. For me personally, I only was hoping not to get the Glen Carr reel. The double figure eight was just something I did not want to teach. So I was just crossing my fingers I wouldn't get that one. And I felt very comfortable teaching any of the others. So the last part of my entry says, and that's it. Hopefully good news will be on the way ASAP, and I'll feel really stupid now if I failed. So I did get my results in September, so it was about a 3-month wait, and I passed all the sections first time. I was very happy. So it shows that the read that you have coming out of the exam too, like kind of your gut instinct of whether you passed or not, is probably correct. I know a lot of the candidates will talk after, and for the written sections, for example, you'll kind of get a sense of whether the rest of the crowd had the same answers as you or if they didn't. So that kind of will influence your feeling on the exam too. The final question that I have that was submitted through Instagram for this episode, and remember that there will be an exam tips or study hacks podcast episode coming later. They asked, how much does the panel talk to you? And in your teaching dancing sections, the panel will talk to you when they need to talk to you. And what you would want to do is go in and pretend that that exam room is your studio and essentially ignore them unless they address you. You don't need to ask them for permission to do anything. You don't need to ask them questions. You do what you think is right and take control of that room as if it was your own class, because that's really what they want to see. They want to see that confidence and they want to see you take control of the room. If they need to address you, they'll call you by name and say, hey, could you explain that further? Or what do you mean by that? Or, okay, we've seen that movement. Can you move on to the next one? And remember that each of these parts, the heavy step, the soft shoe step, and each Kaylee is only 10 minutes. So you're teaching for 40 minutes. Make sure you use all of that time to do teaching, not chatting, not asking questions, and not being unsure. So just take control of the room and pretend it's your own class. So that's going to do it for episode number 18. And remember that another episode will be coming on TCRG exam study tips and how to lay out your studying, how to structure it, how long to study. All of that great info will be coming on another episode this season. So make sure you are subscribed on whatever listening platform you're using. If you're on Instagram or Facebook, I would love for you to share a screenshot of the podcast episode you're listening to on your story. And I hope to see you around on one of my social media platforms, whether it's on my Instagram or in our listeners-only private Facebook group. Until next week.